All right, the next matter is Gillespie versus Council. It's case 67421. This is the time set for the appellate argument. And Mr. Kunimoto, are you going for the appellant?
Yes, I am.
All right, and who else is with you today?
Kathy Gillespie, on behalf of herself individually, and on behalf of the attorney.
All right, thank you. And who's going to be arguing for the respondent?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Gus Flangus. I'll be arguing on behalf of the respondent. With me is co-counsel Jessica Peterson and one of my clients, Ronnie Council.
Okay. All right. We have everybody here. Okay. Thank you. All right. Welcome to all of you. All right. You can go ahead then, Mr. Kunimoto.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May I just ask really quick, I thought A and B was dismissed from the appeal.
I think that was Ms. Barbara Allen, who was another defendant.
I thought we have an order from May 3rd of 2015. Okay.
May it please the court. This is an appeal.
Do you want to save any? Do you want to save any rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor. Maybe 3 or 4 minutes.
All
4 minutes.
Okay. All right. We'll start over.
All right. Please, the court. This is an appeal of an order granting a preliminary injunction against the appellants after a preliminary injunction evidentiary hearing. It is important to note that this hearing was not consolidated with a trial on the merits.
Okay, well, now that I'm sorry to interrupt again, but this was a 7-day evidentiary hearing with opening statements and closing statements and bench memoranda, and I know it's your contention on appeal, but it was your request for the preliminary injunction and not a trial on the merits. You didn't ask Judge Denton that. You asked for expedited discovery with an evidentiary hearing, which you got a 7-day. That's a bench trial in district court. So my question to you is, why should this court consider that particular argument? Because I see where you're going. You're going with, we should have had a trial on the merits, and we read the briefs. You never presented that to Judge Denton. Why should we consider that on appeal?
It is the question,
why should we even consider the issue of trial on the merits? Because that's the first thing you're talking about right now when you have the Guillen case and you requested and you got exactly what you requested from Judge Denton.
Well, we didn't get exactly everything we requested. We did request that the preliminary injunction not be issued. But we felt that because this was such an important issue, it goes to the fundamental right of free speech, that if any decision were to be made, even though we understand there was limited discovery, that we wanted an opportunity to present witnesses, though the testimony would be limited to certain issues. Nonetheless, even though it was an evidentiary hearing, it was not a trial on the merits. And we made it clear with Judge Denton, and he even acknowledged the same. But because the issue at hand is whether or not the injunction is considered a prior restraint on my client's ability to exercise the right of free speech, this case, and as well as the cases that we cited to, the decision should not have been to enjoin my clients until there has been a full adjudication on the merits, until there's been full discovery and an opportunity for my clients to present full evidence as to why the injunction should not be issued.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying now trial on the merits on appeal, but that this claim of having a full trial on the merits was not actually argued to Judge Denton. And if so, can you provide me a citation to the record of exactly where you asked Judge Denton for a full trial on the merits?
Well, we asked him that it would not be consolidated with a full trial on the merits. And that is referenced in Joint Appendix, I think it's page 142. And the testimony or the quotation from Judge Denton was, "I'll make it clear now if I didn't before. I don't consider the upcoming hearing, an evidentiary hearing on the motion for preliminary injunction, to be a consolidation with the trial on the merits. As Your Honor, as this court may know, the preliminary injunction order enjoined the following. It is further ordered, adjudged, and decreed that the defendants Gillespie Office and Systems Furniture, LLC, DBA A&B Printing and Mailing, and Kathy Gillespie, their officers, agents, servants, employees, and attorneys, and those persons in active concert or participation with them who receive actual notice hereof, be and they are hereby enjoined and restrained from creating and sending out any materials regarding the plaintiffs substantially similar to those which are the subject of the postcard. The issues presented in this appeal are as follows: whether the order constitutes an unconstitutional prior restraint on protected speech, whether the order is impermissibly vague and overbroad in that it fails to adequately define the conduct it prohibits, and whether the respondents fail to demonstrate that they are likely to succeed on the merits of any one of their claims. First, the order must be vacated to the extent that it applies to the plaintiff's organized karma in Alchemy. Here, the order expressly runs in favor of all plaintiffs, which include Ms. Counsel, Organized Karma, and Alchemy, even though the court had acknowledged the following, and I'm referring to Joint Exhibit page 1370. As a preliminary matter, the postcard does not identify or mention two of the three plaintiffs in this case, Organized Karma and Alchemy. While Ms. Counsel owns and operates Organized Karma and Alchemy Associates, the court will not conflate a statement regarding Ms. Counsel as a statement concerning Organized Karma or Alchemy. Accordingly, because a defamation claim requires a false statement of fact concerning a plaintiff, Organized Karma and Alchemy are not reasonably likely to prevail on their defamation claim. This is referenced in the preliminary injunction order, page 24, paragraph 18. Notwithstanding this finding by the court, the order improperly runs in favor of all plaintiffs, plural, as opposed to only Ms. Counsel.
Did you ever ask to have that corrected in a post-hearing motion?
We filed our appeal with this court instead, Your Honor, because there were several issues that my clients had strong feelings about, so we thought this was the most appropriate form.
Okay. So that you're pointing that out as the first and most blatant error?
Well, it's the first. I wouldn't say it's the most blatant. We feel there are several errors in the order. The United Supreme Court has held that any prior restraint on expression comes to this court with a heavy presumption against its constitutional validity. As the district court properly noted in the preliminary injunction order, page 19, paragraph 4, injunctions against any speech, even libel, constitute prior restraints. They prevent speech before it occurs by requiring court permission before that speech can be repeated. It's also referenced on Joint Appendix 1365. Furthermore, the district court acknowledged, also in the order, page 20, paragraph 5, that prior restraints on speech and publication are the most serious and the least tolerable infringement of First Amendment rights, JA 1366. Aside from the order being a prior restraint, this order is impermissibly vague and overbroad because it does not adequately define the conduct that is being prohibited. Nevada Rule of Civil Procedure 65D states that every order granting an injunction shall be specific in terms, shall describe in reasonable detail, and not by reference to the complaint or other document, the act or acts sought to be restrained. In fact, in paragraph 42 of the order, the court acknowledged that injunctive relief must be narrowly tailored, JA 1363. However, contrary to the arguments contained in the respondent's brief, the mailer does not define what is considered substantially similar to those which are the subject of the postcard. In those instances when the district court had defined an actual term, it made clear which specific term was being defined and used capital letters to denote that a term was being defined.
Well, I mean, couldn't you read that to say, here's the court is trying to enjoin statements that are just like this, but maybe they change one sentence or one word, or they printed on a green postcard instead of a white one, all right? Because if you say, okay, I'm just enjoining this defamatory speech, they can just go out and send a green postcard that has this exact same stuff on and say, look, it's not the same. It's a little bit different. So what verbiage do you think would constitutionally capture a minor technical change like that that really doesn't change the defamatory substance of the postcard and would be permissible?
If I understand correctly, is the question what language would be permissible?
Well, what the court clearly is after is this. The court has made, the district court has made a finding that this postcard is defamatory. It has some defamatory statements in it, right? But in a way, just saying, I don't want you to send out this postcard doesn't accomplish its purpose, because then they can just print it green or blue or put polka dots on it, and then it's not the same statement. So couldn't you say that, okay, this is what the court is after. It's after statements that are just like this, but technically different. But what, so, and would you say that that is something that the court can at least try to do? And if so, what would be the language that would properly capture that and would conform to the First Amendment?
I don't think it would be appropriate for the court to do that. Because the court has to define specifically what conduct is being prohibited. So if there's any reference to substantially similar or terms that can be interpreted in different ways, then it's inappropriate to issue a prior restraint because it would necessarily chill protected speech.
What if then taken to its next level and it didn't have substantially similar that language in it, but it said, this court said, the district court said, we find it to be defamatory, it's off on its percentages, it's off on a lot of its material, it's defamatory, so it makes that binding effect. Okay, and then you have the Goyan case that says you can give a preliminary injunction. What if the injunction had merely said, you cannot, she cannot send out this particular, what's it called, a pamphlet?
Particular mailer.
Mailer.
Well,
I mean, doesn't Goyan say that you can? Because Goyan is still law. I mean, how do we get around the Nevada Supreme Court or Court of Appeals? Goyan is still good law, and it has allowed for preliminary injunctions in defamation cases as opposed to waiting until the end of trial.
Well, the Goyan case did not involve...
Did I not say it right? Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I don't know.
I'm mispronouncing it. Yeah. But the Goyan case did not analyze or address whether the injunction affirmed would violate the First Amendment. In fact, the Goyan court did not address First Amendment issues at all. This case is of limited value because in determining whether the district court's preliminary injunction order was appropriate, the court must consider whether there was a prior restraint, whether First Amendment issues are at play. We don't know what was argued in the Goyan case, but there's no reference in that opinion that First Amendment issues were ever at issue in that case.
All right. You're almost at 3 minutes now.
Okay.
So basically your answer is no, then even pursuant to Goyan, the district court would have been incorrect to issue a preliminary injunction saying this mailer cannot be mailed.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The injunction should not be issued. One, there was no trial on the merits or final adjudication. Number two, the language is not narrowly tailored. And even more so, the court's basis for issuing the injunction is based on a finding that there was commercial speech. But the United Supreme Court in Bolger have found and identified a three-factor test as to whether or not commercial speech exists. The speech is an advertisement, references a specific product, and three, there was an economic motivation for the speech. This three-factor test was also affirmed in the Ninth Circuit case of Hunt v. City of Los Angeles. Yet despite acknowledging this three-factor test, the district court specifically found that the subject postcard does not affirmatively advertise any product or service.
Why isn't this political speech? She's a political consultant. Someone doesn't want aspiring politicians to hire her. Why isn't this political speech? Why is it commercial speech at all?
Why is it commercial speech?
Yeah, why isn't it political speech?
It's not commercial speech. I agree with you. This is not commercial speech. And the court erred in finding that this was commercial speech, which is subject to lesser protections, because the three-factor test was not satisfied, and he even acknowledged in the order, page 23, paragraph 14, that the subject postcard does not affirmatively advertise any product or service. And because the court found that one of the three required factors to find commercial speech was missing, it was inappropriate to utilize commercial speech as the basis to issue an injunction against the appellants.
So what would happen in this case if this is reversed and remanded? Just go to trial then and pick up where you left off here?
If it was reversed and remanded, we would still ask for a decision from this court because the plaintiffs are seeking equitable relief. And the judge would have, to some extent, the discretion to fashion some type of injunctive relief if the court were to find that a permanent injunction was appropriate. But I think this court could provide some guidance as to what language would be appropriate, if any, given our objections to the current language contained in the preliminary injunction.
Okay, we'll save 1 minute for your rebuttal, and we'll let Mr. Flangus answer that question. Maybe if he'll propose the language rather than us. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon. If it may please the court, again, I'm Gus Flangus. I represent the respondents in this matter. As you've seen throughout the argument in the briefings, this is a case about a prior restraint of speech when it involves defamatory and other types of speech that are not really protected by the Constitution. For example, there's been several Supreme Court cases that have said that we don't really extend the glorious and extravagant protections of the First Amendment to lies, to defamatory material.
Well, let me ask you this. You have a whole bunch of statements on this card. Some of them have been found to be defamatory. Some of them are truthful. Can the respondent in this matter send out those truthful statements, or would that be a violation of the court's injunction?
The way the injunction reads, the answer is no.
So
it's true, she can send it out. The problem is, if you look at that card, the card says strictly that she loses 80% of her cases. All in all, that's not true. The postcard itself carries what ostensibly they're claiming is a complete list of all her cases. It wasn't even close. It was about a third of all the campaigns she's
had. But then doesn't that lend their argument that she would have to go into court based on this preliminary injunction every time into Judge Denton and say, Judge Denton, here's another one. I just want to put out my opinion. What if Ms. Gillespie just wants to say, she's the biggest loser. That's my opinion. I'm Kathy Gillespie. I think she's the biggest loser, and I'm just going to send out this mailer. Chemerinsky's whole Law Review article is based around chilling First Amendment speech, because then she would have to go into court every single time and ask Judge Denton permission. Is this substantially similar? Is that substantially similar based on this particular injunction?
Well, here's one thing that's been kind of left off by counsel when he was up here a little while ago. Here's what the court said. You know, you're going to enjoin speech that's substantially similar to those which are the subject of the postcard. Court further defines it in paragraph 49 of the findings is it is anonymous items falsely disparaging the plaintiff. So it's very clear by the court with that language that what the court is trying to keep from happening here. One of the things that's really important to keep in mind here is my client is not a politician, is not a public official or anything else. She is a business person. She is in the business of doing political consulting. Again, I heard, you know, Judge Tao, I believe it was, say, why is this not political speech? It isn't political speech. They are disparaging a business and defaming a business because that's what she does. Because she is a political consultant, it's real important to realize that this is a very, very small world. It's not like some of us attorneys where you can put a billboard up, if you've been injured, call my law office. You will not see a billboard saying, I am a political consultant, call me up. Or you're not going to see flyers going out and everything else. Political consultants are word of mouth. And when you get something like this going out to every single judicial candidate that was either running or anticipating running, plus other individuals that were running or anticipating running, this destroys a business. And let me read the Guillon case. And what it says specifically there. In the Guillon case, it says, it is a long-standing rule of equity that publication of unjust and malicious matters will not be restrained simply upon a showing of its falsity, which if you just read it by itself, it doesn't do me any good, but let's go on with it. Equity will, however, restrain tortious acts where it is essential to preserve a business or property interest and also restrain the publication of false and defamatory words where it is the means or incident of such tortious conduct. The right to carry on a lawful business without obstruction is a property right and acts committed without just cause or excuse which interfere with the carrying on of plaintiff's business or destroy its custom, its credit, or its profits, do an irreparable injury, and thus authorize the issuance of an injunction. Now, what's really important to realize here, too, is that, you know, this is, the Guillon case is a case about free speech, because the facts of the case involved the defendant in that case holding up a sign, making false and defamatory statements about the respondent in this case. So that's clearly a speech issue. Just because the Supreme Court didn't go down and, you know, one by one and do a First Amendment analysis does not mean it didn't consider it, because it was very clear in that case, this is involving speech. This guy had a sign. The only difference between the Guillon case and this Instinct case is there wasn't a sign. It was a postcard. It was a postcard sent out to 115 recipients, which then resulted in a complete downturn on my client's business. Now, here's the thing. During the course of this 7-day evidentiary hearing, Ms. Gillespie, who is the respondent in this, or excuse me, the appellant in this matter, while she was on the stand, was asked, would you do the same thing again? Her answer was unequivocally, yes, I would do the same thing again. And so,
So what's the basis of enjoining speech about organized karma and alchemy when the district court expressly found that neither corporation would enjoy a likelihood of success?
Let me direct your attention to a different place on that. In paragraph 6 of the findings of fact and conclusions of law, which is on page 3, the court makes a specific finding that Ms. Counsel is the face of both alchemy and organized karma, and it goes on to make findings in that same vein that the reason people go to either alchemy or organized karma is because they're hiring Ronnie Counsel. That's how she does her business, is through those two businesses there. That was one of the things that was omitted in the appellant's paperwork when Judge Denton made the ruling that he made on this. See, the reality of this is in what happened in this case, that flyer went out, started destroying my client's business. Ms. Gillespie, the appellant, denied adamantly that she had anything to do with it, even sent my client an email that she was going to take my client to court and threatened her with litigation if she continued to proceed with her allegations that they had something to do with it. The only reason we found out exactly who did it is they left a barcode on the postcard. In fact, the draft, I hate to even mention this, the draft postcard had Judge Tao's name on it. And so the postcard had a barcode on it. We were able to go down to the post office, and this is not an easy thing. It's not something that the ordinary person on the street can do. We had to go through some folks that had access to that we were able to trace it back to the appellants. And then after we traced it back to them, filed our complaint, we got a new and complete story of what happened.
Right.
I mean, it would take me over a half hour to even go into all the facts on what they were saying.
Why would she deny doing it, but then say she would do it again?
Well, see, this is the initial part. She denied doing it. We filed the complaint, and she says we printed it, but we weren't responsible for the content. Mm. And then as we developed the case through discovery and then went to a 7-day evidentiary hearing, towards the end of that evidentiary hearing, I asked her the question while she was on the stand, would you do this again? She said yes. And so this is why Judge Denton, I can't get inside Judge Denton's head, obviously, but I can just tell you this is one of the major factors that he crafted this. He narrowly tailored this injunctive relief.
But how is that narrow if he said similar conduct?
Let me read it again. Substantially similar to which, to those which are the subject of the postcard. Right.
So Mr. Kunimoto was asked the question, but isn't the question more directed towards your side? How should this language be narrowly written here so it's not too broad, it's not vague?
I don't think you can get it any more narrow, Your Honor. I think right now it's as narrow as it can. He limits it to what she put in that postcard.
How would a person know what they can and can't send if she's going to do it again and she wants to do it again and she can't wait to do it again, except for she's restrained right now while it's on appeal, but she can't wait to do it again? How would she know what is substantially similar if the conduct or the if we just don't know what is substantially similar?
She needs to take the postcard and look at it. And she needs to say, I probably shouldn't go out there saying she's lost 80% of her cases.
Well, hang on.
And put a list on
this postcard has a whole list on it. Some of the items in the list are truthful. They were her clients, okay? If I take out all the defamatory statements and just leave the truthful ones in there, so there's nothing but truthful statements in there, isn't that still substantially similar to the postcard that was sent? Why wouldn't it be? What about the word substantially similar excludes that postcard?
Because paragraph 49 of the findings of fact says anonymous items falsely disparaging plaintiff. So if she's absolutely clear, if she wants to take one of the cases that's on there and says she lost this case on behalf of
someone, that's okay.
That would be okay because it's not false. It's a true statement. But if she's going to go on there and say she's lost cases, you know, one of the cases.
For Don Shiraz, right.
Yeah, Don Shiraz. She had nothing to do with that case, but she's listed on there as doing
it. So if you take out Don Shiraz and you take out some of the other falsities, if she wants to just send out the percentages that
she lost
true,
this case, lost that
you're
case?
Saying that that's okay, even though it's substantially similar.
But even if she does going to do those percentages, she better not go out there and say 80%. She better be extremely accurate because that's what Judge Den's narrowly crafted injunctive relief states. And that's all she's got to do. Pick up the card, see what's false. We've been in this case now for 2 years. I can't even tell you how many depositions have been taken. We're scheduled to go to trial right now, tentatively in November, depending on Judge Denton's case. And then I want to answer one other question y'all had earlier for counsel about A and B printing not being part of this.
Yeah, I thought they were in bankruptcy.
They went into BK, yeah. And then they were originally dismissed from this.
Right.
We went into the bankruptcy court. Got a relief from stay, so they're back in this.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where that's left at this juncture.
Okay. So
well, I see an issue was ordered on May 3rd of 2015, and that was the order partially dismissing the appeal.
So it is set for trial pretty soon then.
Yes, and right now we go to a calendar call on October 3rd, and then that'll tell us whether or not Judge Denton right now has a 13 or 14-day stack in November. And we're going to probably eat a substantial chunk of that, but it's going to depend. Are there cases way, way older than us getting close to the five-day rule that might bump us, but we're hoping not. We're trying to get in there in November based on, you know, because we just did come out of the bankruptcy court on this with a relief.
When did you come out of bankruptcy court?
About 2.5 months, 3 months ago. I'm just estimating. Please don't hold me to the,
right.
the exact.
Was it?
Okay. Is there any merit to the argument the appellant made that you should have waited for trial as to part of this case?
No, Your Honor, and the reason is it's close to the Guillen case. Somebody holding up a sign, as I mentioned earlier, you have a very small pool of folks that are involved in the political consulting business. This goes out, and there's absolutely no way to ever really determine the full breadth of the damage. Because, for example, if you were running, you would have gotten that card. Oh, I'm not going to use her. Then you talk to Judge Silver, who's might be running and didn't see the card, but you mention it to her, that, boy, did you see that about Ronnie Counsel? And Judge Silver might go to Judge Tao and say, did you see this about this? And it goes on, and it can proliferate all over the place on it. So it's really critical that this had to stop now, because if you had a chance to be at this trial and heard the testimony, you would know that there was a lot of vindictiveness involved in this case. And, you know, if she wasn't restrained, my client wouldn't even have two nickels to rub together unless she had very close friends that were running for office right now. And that's why that injunctive relief was so necessary to preserve and save that business. And that's what the Guillen case is
about. How long, and this is just complete curiosity, if this was a 7-day preliminary injunction evidentiary hearing, how long are you asking for trial, or both sides asking for trial, from Judge Denton in November, because your calendar call, and either one of you can answer this, I mean, your calendar call has got to be pretty darn close. It's got to be probably within about 2 weeks.
October 3rd is our calendar call.
Right. So, I mean, what do you all ask them the same thing?
Anticipate 10 days.
10 days.
Probably almost the exact same testimony with some changes, because now we got some experts for damages and you're dealing with jury voir dire.
I see.
So probably 10, maybe even 12 days. Now, I will note one other thing for you. It was a 7-day evidentiary hearing. A couple of those days in there were half days. So I want to be completely upfront about that. But I think this is going to take about 10 full jury days.
So you're going to have to repeat the testimony because the jury will be there.
That's correct. And the testimony and the deposition testimony and hearing testimony and a lot of other things.
Can't this case be settled?
Well, it can be with a good checkbook. It's like any case, but in any event, it is a pretty complicated case. There's going to be a lot of witnesses called, and it's going to be a long time in front of the jury.
Are you suggesting we get our decision out pretty quickly in light of the impending trial?
I don't think it impacts the trial one way or the other, Your Honor. I think if this decision would come out soon, it wouldn't impact the trial. If it comes out after the trial, it becomes a moot point.
Okay, but if you're the one restrained, you might want it sooner.
I don't know. I don't know what it was. If she wants to get off the thing and go do it again and add to her liability, more power to her, I guess. But the bottom line is, if she's not restrained based on her own testimony under oath, she will continue to do this and destroy this lady. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Flangus.
At one point, deserves clarification. While there was a 7-day evidentiary hearing, I think it was referenced in the respondent's answering brief that there were 22 hours of testimony. Keep in mind, for the upcoming jury trial, we're requesting at least 2 full weeks, 10 full days, 7 hours. At least 70 hours will be needed to try this case. So the preliminary injunction evidentiary hearing was just what was not complete, and it was very limited in scope. Notwithstanding that, I'm not here to relitigate the facts before this court. But the issue is, even in the Guillen case, there was no analysis of whether the First Amendment was at issue. There was no analysis of whether prior restraints were at issue. There was no analysis of whether the injunctive relief was narrowly tailored. If anything, I think clarification of the current status of the law would be warranted by this court, such as, what is the standard for commercial speech, given the precedential cases of the U.S. Supreme Court and the Ninth Circuit, and whether or not an injunction enjoining free speech based on a defamation claim is appropriate prior to a full adjudication on the merits.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Excellent job by both sides. This matter will then stand submitted, and we'll have a decision hopefully in the near future.
Thank you.
Thank you.